Zito from 7th to 1st in the final event. You are a champion.
And Oleksiak has done it! The girl from the 6th has got 6 Olympic medals!
The substitute for Canada just about gets it through! It's a glory gold for Canada!
Kathy Lefty goes up to Graham, takes the lead, looks a winner, draws away from Graham and Mary. This is a famous victory, a magnificent performance. What a legend. What a champion.
It is Off the Podium, an Olympics podcast coming to you today for another athlete interview episode, and a great one coming your way today. We're going to equestrian. We haven't had an equestrian athlete on this show since the great Andrew Hoy a couple of years ago. Can you believe it's been that long? And today, not only are we going back to equestrian, we are going to dressage in equestrian, a sport that we've never covered, at least the discipline of the sport that we've never covered. Jessica Dertel is on the show today, and we're going to learn a lot about her journey in the sport, but most importantly, we're going to learn about what on earth dressage is. We've talked a lot about this sport on the show over the 8 or so year history of Off the Podium, and we've never had it explained to us properly until today. Jess goes into detail about dressage, why we should love it more, what on earth is happening out there when she's on the horse, and everything else in between. We also learn about just where she's at right now in her journey towards Paris and making a debut Olympics. We find out why on earth Australia have never medaled in dressage. This is something that I only learned recently, so therefore we've got to fix this. And of course, most importantly, we learn a lot more about her horse and why on earth her horse won't win a medal should she win a medal in Paris. Plenty to cover here with our chat with Australian Olympic, well, future Olympic rider in the sport of equestrian, Jessica Dertel. Over the years on this show, we have talked about many different sports. And there's, I think, one sport that if I have to go through all of them, that maybe we're the most confused about, we've had a lot to say about, but we've actually never had anybody on this show to help explain it a little bit more to help our confusion. It is the sport of dressage. We've obviously had equestrian athletes on this show before. The legendary Andrew Hoy, of course, joined us a little over a year or so ago, but didn't talk about dressage. He had too many other things to cover in his esteemed career. But today we are getting to the bottom of dressage with one of Australia's best dressage riders, who is on the cusp of making her Olympic debut in Paris in only a few months' time, done great things on the dressage circuit in Australia and around the world. And I'm so very excited to be joined and off the podium today by Jessica Dertel. Jess, first of all, welcome off the podium. It's a pleasure to have you on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I do want to like literally start off by saying like, what the hell is dressage? Explain it to me. But I'm going to build up to that, Jess, because I feel we need to touch a little bit on yourself personally a bit before we get to that burning question, because I would love to learn a little bit about how you get into not just dressage, but equestrian itself, because I believe you were basically born and put on a horse. Is that correct?
That's definitely correct. I'm very, very lucky that my family have been involved with horses for many years, and we have a family farm here at Future Farms. And from the moment I could walk, I was definitely put straight on horses.
And how is that, I guess, when you, I mean, the moment you can walk, you don't have a choice of this, you're a baby, right? But like, I mean, I guess by that point when you're growing up, you've been around horses your entire life, was this something that not only did you love to the point where I get to hang out with horses, but you wanted to pursue this more as something that you wanted to do as a career to become an equestrian rider?
Definitely. So having horses around me since I was a baby have definitely brought this passion to life, and watching everybody compete and train, and I just love it. It's something that I've always wanted to continue to do, but it's definitely a passion for me.
Were there other sports that you did, or was it sort of a equestrian and riding and nothing else?
I have done many sports. I'm a very sporty person. I've done swimming, I've done basketball, I've done netball, tennis, badminton. I used to love running for cross country or sprints. Lots of stuff. So I love to do lots of different sports.
All of those except for netball are Olympic sports, Jess. So was this kind of an Olympic bug where you're sort of growing up watching the Olympics and having aspirations to become an Olympian?
My coordination off the horse isn't so great. So was never going to make it that far, but it was always something. I just really love being out and about and doing stuff and meeting new people.
In terms of where you're from, so you're from a place called Belinda, which is not too far from Melbourne, I believe. But I always love it when I hear about places that, A, I'm not familiar with, and I'm sure a lot of people aren't familiar with. But tell us about Belinda. What's in Belinda? Why would I visit Belinda besides coming to see you and the horses, Jess?
Belinda's very, very small. So there's only housing, there's a little tiny school, and at the end of our road, there's another school which is just outside of Belinda. It's Darrick Gwim. But we're actually in an amazing spot. We're about 25 minutes from Melbourne Airport. Romsey is right near us. Wallen, they're two small towns that are really beautiful. And we're also right near Sunbury. So we're in a great area. And competitions for us, our local comps are within roughly an hour to 2 hours away from us. So it makes it really easy.
Nice and close. So is this kind of like a horsing mecca in Victoria? Is this kind of like the horse district that you are sort of in?
Yeah, the Massanin Ranges is very, very big for horses. So there's lots and lots of horsey people around here and many coaches and amazing people. So it's a great area.
Are there any other Olympians or people of note from Belinda, or could you become the first to come from the great town of Belinda?
So Mary Hannah, who has been one of my coaches, six-time Olympian, actually lives about 15, 20 minutes from here.
Right.
So we have an amazing horsey area.
She'd have to have a statue by now, wouldn't she, after six Olympics? I mean, she'd be due, wouldn't she?
Why not?
Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, not everybody goes to six Olympics. Most people don't go to one. So, I mean, I'm sure that kind of she's got to have it. I want to talk about Mary throughout this chat as well. When it comes, I guess, so through the discipline, so when you discover this passion, you're riding, obviously, with the different disciplines you have in equestrian, how do you land on dressage? I mean, we talk to a lot of, say, skiers on this show, and there's many different disciplines of skiing, and I like to find out how they choose one over the other. But is that a case in equestrian that you got to choose jumping, you got to choose eventing, you got to choose dressage?
So I think cross-training is a very big thing of doing a little bit of every discipline with the horses. And I actually wasn't in dressage until I was a little bit older. So I started out on the Arabian horses, which is what we've bred for many years. And we've competed all over the world with the Arabian horses. I've actually competed in the UAE on Arabian horses as well. And we've had horses compete in America over the years, as well as all around Australia. And then I bought a little pony when I was younger, and I ventured into open hacking. I did some pony club on him, ended up doing lots of different styles of competitions. And I was at a competition at one of the Arabian shows on another horse called Naaman Uptown Girl, who was my first hack, so big horse. And one of Mum's friends came to watch, Tor Vandenberg, and he said to Mum, "Why isn't she riding dressage? She's tall and she's doing a really good job. You know, she'd be great." And Mum used to do some dressages herself when she used to ride. And Tor got me onto this gorgeous FEI schoolmaster called Valerius Waltermeyer, who started my dressage career. He was not by any means the most fancy horse, but he taught me so much, and I'm so thankful for getting the opportunity to be able to ride him. And then came along Sam and Brett from Sable Farm, who decided that the dressage journey was incredible, and the training and the time that gets put into teaching these horses all the movements. It's not just get put on a fancy horse and get to compete. It's years and years of training and learning how to do it all, and decided to go on this journey and brought back just Gladstone MH, Ascara Dijou and Zanzibar, who started me continuing at the highest levels in dressage, and then have brought other horses onto the team, including Senan, who I am trying now for Paris Olympics with.
I want to learn about Senan because, I mean, I love learning about all horses when it comes to anything in equestrian, because I love this fascination that comes with, like, obviously the pairing and the horses and how all that works. A couple of things I just want to touch on what you're saying there, though. What is open hacking? What is that?
Open hacking is show horse. They do it in the UK as well, and they do it here in Australia, where the horses are prepped to the nines. They look amazing. They look like supermodels. They're all shiny, have patterns everywhere, plaited up and look great, and they do workouts. It's based off the presentation of the horse and the work that they receive as well.
So it's kind of like a precursor to dressage, would you say, in a way?
Kind of. The very, very basics of dressage, I guess, of the walk, trot, canter and showing what your horse can do.
And when that decision came, or that sort of that idea that's been floated around of why isn't she trying dressage, what was your thought on dressage at that point?
Dressage wasn't something that when I first started, it was something that I thought I'd dabbled in a little bit with ponies, but hadn't done when I got this new horse, Naaman Uptown Girl, at that time. She was a little bit more spicy, a little bit hot. So it was just keeping her contained and letting her enjoy herself in the arena and working with her to build a partnership. And I hadn't thought about doing dressage on her. And we had the Arabian horses, which are very, very trainable, but I just hadn't competed them in the dressage. And then I got the opportunity to ride Valerius Valtemeyer and give it a go, and I fell in love with it. The training that goes into it is incredible.
So is it a case then of, when you're doing something like dressage or the cross hack, like if I'm say a jumper or an eventer, I'm generally not going to transition into dressage. Is that sort of like you kind of pick a lane at a certain point and you don't really transition, if that makes sense?
I think lots of people do pick a lane and don't transition as much, but they definitely can in any way. It's obviously people find a passion for the sport that they enjoy, but as I said before, cross training. So even my top level dressage horses here will go over jumps and go on trail rides and just enjoy their life rather than do one specific thing. And I think the dressage is the basics of all of the flat work that the show jumpers do, and the eventers have to compete in dressage as well. And so the dressage is a very big part of lots of the disciplines in the equestrian industry.
Before we talk more about that, one thing I want to backtrack on a little bit. So your family's farm, Future Farms, I believe your dad is Canadian. Is that correct?
Yes, my dad is Canadian.
Okay, now I bring that up because we are kind of a co-Canadian show. We have a big Canadian arm on this. So I've got to ask, where in Canada is he from originally?
He was from Star City.
Okay, right. Well, we've got the Winnipeg connection on this show just in terms of that. So do you get brought up in a house with sort of like Canadian quirks? Like, do you have hockey on in the background? Like, are you extra polite? You're saying sorry a lot more? I mean, kind of, do you get a Canadian edge to your childhood?
I think a little bit, but Dad's actually spent probably most of his life away from Canada now, as he grew up in Star City and then went to America to train with the Arabian horses and then came to Australia and met my mum.
Right.
So, but there's always hockey on and there's always lots of sports playing on the TV.
Who's the hockey team that you have to go for?
No clue. But baseball, it's the Blue Jays. So
right, okay.
We know that much.
maybe there's a Leafs if the Toronto, the trend continues there with that. When it comes to then going full into dressage, I just want to pull this up right now in terms of the explanation for dressage, because we're going to get you to fill in some gaps for us here. I didn't even realize that it was dressage is French for training. So there's a fact that I learned, which is very appropriate for Paris. Now, this is the brief explanation I've got for dressage. It demonstrates the horse's ability to respond to the rider's commands as it performs a series of movements in a prearranged order. Is that the most simplistic way that you can explain dressage?
That's a very textbook way of explaining it. I think many dressage riders, to people that don't understand, is basically we're sand dancing with our horses. So we build a big partnership, and it takes a lot of trust, time, and love for your horse and combination to work out how to do all of this. If you think professional dancers take years to perfect what they want to do, and then if they change partners, they've got to find a way to connect with that partner as well. So the dressage is sand dancing, basically.
Sand dancing. I've never heard it explained that way. That's very interesting. Because are the horses deliberately bred for dressage? Like, are they, so they're sort of raised as a dressage horse, essentially?
Yep. So a lot of the equestrian disciplines, they have specific breeding for the show jumping, the eventing, and the dressage. But there's no means to say that a horse that's bred for jumping can't be a dressage horse or vice versa. Obviously, the horse has to love what they do and be good at it. So you can breed as much as you want of specific bloodlines to try and ensure you have the best possibility, but it doesn't always end up that way. So as long as they have a good mind, great trainability, and a beautiful temperament and movement, then they can be a dressage horse or a show jumper or a eventer.
Because it's so, like, this is the only sport at the Olympics where you are legitimately, you know, relying on something else that's, say, a living thing, like an animal. This is a horse, right? This isn't running where you just get up and go, I'm fast. This isn't swimming. I can get in a pool. I can swim fast. Like, you have to rely on quite an important instrument a la a horse to do this. And it just, it's always interesting with any sport involving horses where the breeding aspect of it, because I'm sure horse racing, you're trying to breed a fast horse, dressage, I don't want to say a good dancer, but we'll touch on the technicalities of it, jumping, all that sort of stuff, because just on basing what you're saying, you could have the two greatest dressage horses of all time get together, play some Barry White. They have a baby foal. And then later on, that horse is going to be the next Maccabi Diva and a super fast horse, right? I guess you can never know until it, like, what age, I guess, my long-winded way of saying this, Jess, at what point do you realize great dressage horse or no, it's going to be running the Melbourne Cup?
So obviously as foals, we can see them come around and you see their movement and their type and their build of their body. And you know, go, yes, I think I've got a good one. But as they age through coming up the levels and the years of training you put into them, they either want to do the job or they don't. And you might find something that they love and something that they don't love. It's like two people that love basketball, their child might love football. Mm. So it's coming through and if they have the suspense and the trainability, then they may be a dressage horse and really take your time in training them so they can learn to enjoy the sport as well.
I don't know if this is going to be the dumbest question I've ever asked or the smartest question I ever asked, but how do you get a horse to like dressage? What are you doing with this horse when it's growing up to get it to want to do dressage and not something else?
I think the patience. You have to keep patience and love the horse that you're working with for yourself to succeed and have a good start to their life. So as a foal, having handling and bringing them through a good weanling prep when they get taken away from their mothers and then when you break them in, making sure they have the best start possible, of that they enjoy the break-in process, that they're quiet and they're forward and they're accepting of the bit, and then slowly following the training scale to ensure that your horse has the best start possible. And then obviously they make the decision in the end if they love it or hate it, but they generally love it.
Is it kind of like a rebellious teenage phase where all of a sudden the horse is like, "Mom, I don't want to do this. I want to go out with friends." And it's like, "No, Sennin, you are going to training and you are doing as you're told."
I guess everyone could have their bad days and horses are the same. But, you know, overall, as you're training with a horse that, you know, if they love it, if they hate it. And we're very, very lucky that the dressage is something that keeps their mind really active. So a lot of horses love it. And at high-level sports, of anything, obviously, you have to ensure that yourself and the horse are in tip-top shape, and we're very lucky that we have a whole group of sponsors that help us do that and keep our horses in the best shape possible so that when they are in work, they're enjoying every moment of it because they're getting challenged and they love it.
How do you get a horse to respond to your commands? Like, I mean, because you're not allowed to use your voice, are you, in dressage? Like, what are you doing in order for it to listen to you and do what you want it to do?
So a lot of training at home, obviously, is a very big part, same as runners and sprinters have to do lots and lots of running to ensure when they get to the competition that they know when to go and that they can perform. So with the horses at home, we can use our voice and in warm-up and everything, but in the actual arena, the dressage is to show the harmony between horse and rider, that you don't need your voice, that you have your legs that can, you know, give a small kick or a little squeeze and give a different aid. Of every different part of a horse will be a different aid that you've trained onto them, and making sure they're through to the contact and a small half halt and things like that, they all learn to respond to so that you can think of something and they do it, basically.
So you're like twitching a leg or moving something, like it's sort of, it's all about the movement of your body with no vocal commands to get your horse to do what you want it to do in an arena.
Yeah, basically. So at home we can use our voice, as I said, but when we get in the arena, we start using our voice less and less at home. So they start to learn when our leg goes, say, back on one side when we're cantering, they'll do a flying change to the other side. And it's lots and lots of training to have them respond to that, same as a dog asking them to sit or to lay down without using your voice. It takes lots of training, but that's the idea.
Fascinating, because the thing that this is what we love about it whenever we're watching the Olympics, and because we have no clue what's going on, Jess, we're watching it, we're thinking like the horse is stepping to the side, now it's walking backwards, like it's lifting a leg, okay, that's cool, but what's the point of this? But it is fascinating that that's what you're trying to do, because I can imagine there are moments where you've trained this horse to a point and you're getting it to do everything you want, and then all of a sudden maybe it's not doing what you want, but you can't then I guess say something like, "No, damn it, horse, do this." Like, it's for yourself, then you've got to kind of, I guess, control your movements and everything to make it all work in the arena so that the judges are looking at everything in harmony.
Yeah. So it's all about the harmony of it. But the best thing about dressage is every single section of the, say, with the movements that we do. So when we enter, when we stop, when we go, every single part of that is all a different score. So we get scored out of, like up to 10 in every single movement that we do in each section. So if we have a mistake, the horses, they're animals. They have a mind of their own. You can ask them to do everything. Mistakes happen. And you, as long as you take a breath and you keep riding, then you're okay. And then it's more training outside the arena to make sure that you can get through it.
Is it like, say, gymnastics or figure skating where you've got certain targets you've got to meet, you've got to do certain things, or is every, I don't even know what the term is to explain it, Jess, routine perhaps, correct me wherever I'm wrong, is it all individual and unique so that the judges can always look for certain things like, wow, the leg got lifted up an extra inch, I've never seen that before, extra 3 points or something like that?
So for the dressage, we actually get something, what we call them tests, but basically a routine. So the first two tests at the Olympics is the Grand Prix and the Grand Prix Special. So those both have set routines. So everybody competes the exact same test and gets scored accordingly to how they've gone in every single section as the test goes down. And about, you know, the trotting, so the horse trotting along or cantering or walking, or then the specific movements they do, such as passage and piaf, which is all about the more suspense and stuff like that. They get marked out of 10 for those. But then we have something called a freestyle.
Right.
So in a freestyle, we get to do, basically like the figure skaters, we have set components that we have to complete, but we don't have to do it in specific order. So we make our own order. And at the top level, we do submit those to the judges, and then we get scored off our tests that we've made ourselves. But at competitions like national comps or sometimes at some CDIs, we don't put that in. We call that a floor plan.
How open is the freestyle then? Like, can you literally be like, all right, Senan, we're going to be break horse dancing. You're going to be spinning around. I mean, like, what is, in terms of what you can do, like outside of what you've got to meet, how free can you be with your routine?
Super free. So that's the great thing about the freestyle. We actually have something at the end of the test called a degree of difficulty. So we perform the movements that are compulsory anywhere that we want to perform them. And you can do a movement after a movement, which will make it harder. And that all goes into our degree of difficulty. So for instance, I have a horse that I compete for Sable Farm called Siriana. We canter in, stop, and then go extend a canter. It's like a really fast canter into a pirouette. So where they turn in a circle, and that's a good degree of difficulty because everything is so quick into the next thing. Whereas Senan, who I'm trying for Paris for, which is also owned by Sable Farm, I can in halt and then passage, which is basically a slower, more suspended trot and half pass. So where they have to go sideways, keeping the bend and keeping the shoulders slightly in front of behind. So they travel a little bit like this.
Right. And so, and are the judges looking for, like, I guess, what are they looking for in terms of something like that? Is it body movement, shape, form? And are you counted then in the score as well? Like, do you kind of have to be, like, synchronized with the horse's movements, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So the judges have, they go through a whole lot of training to be able to watch us and score us accordingly and give us comments. We actually get feedback on everything that we do. Every single movement, you have the technicalities of how it's meant to be performed. So for the half pass, like I explained before, the shoulders are slightly in front of the hind legs. They have a bend through their rib cage and a little bit through their neck, and they're half pass and they're moving sideways. So the judges get a lot of training to know what they score for each thing and the technicalities of when they break everything down.
So fat, like, this is, I think, the most technical interview I've ever done, Jess, because it's all well and good if I get somebody from a sport where it's like, okay, handball, give me the rules, great, you throw a ball, fantastic, let's talk about your career, or anyway, even the breakers we've had recently on, you know, you get breakdancing explained to me, you can sort of ask this, but this is why, like, I'm so intrigued to get somebody from dressage on, because it's just, it's so technical and unique, and I feel you can sit here for me for an hour and explain it to me, and I'm going to churn on in Paris, and I'm still not going to know, but I'm still going to be like fascinated by it, because it's just, it seems to be like a sport where it's so open in many ways, but so technical. And then I don't know what I'm trying to say here, Jess. I'm just fascinated to learn all these little things with it, because I'm sure, do you get a lot of your friends asking you these similar questions, like, what the hell are you doing on that horse, Jess?
definitely. So it's a little bit difficult to explain at times, but it's a whole lot of training and the harmony between horse and rider.
So obviously Senan's a horse you're trying to go to Paris with, but on average, like, how many horses do you sort of have that you take to competitions? And obviously based on what you're telling me with certain things, that different horses are probably better for a certain competition versus others, if that makes sense.
Yep. So every competition is a little bit different for us here. So the dressage competitions, the last competition at Belinga about a week and a half ago, I only took two horses for myself and two horses for a little client that competes with us. And so that was quite a small team for us. Other times we could take six to a dressage competition and I might compete four or five of those.
Six.
But But then competitions like the Open Hacking, we might take six to 10 sort of a team. And then the Arabian shows, we take even more, but we take a big team of people and lots of riders and lots of trainers. And this week we actually head on to an Arabian competition. We take 30 horses. So
30? Wow.
It's a crazy, crazy sport.
That's a lot of apples that you're taking with you. That's crazy. What is a convoy like then? When you're going to
lots of trucks and lots of floats and so it'll be a very big week, but Australian Arabian Championship, so it's a very big competition and we're very lucky it's at Werribee this year, so we're taking a big team and our team is amazing here at Future Farms. We're very lucky that we have a lot of support of lots of handlers and trainers and riders and we really will make it an amazing competition.
I was going to say with a team of 30 horses. I mean, how many people do you need per horse to kind of keep them into touch? I mean, I'm a Formula One fan. They send two cars to a racetrack and they've got a team of like 600. So, I mean, you know, if that was a case with horses, you're going to have like a small, like, probably how many times more the population of Belinda there going there, Jess?
we're only taking about, there'll be about six of us going with the first load of horses, which is 21. And we all work really well together. So we'll make sure that everything is done amazingly and six people can easily get through all that sort of work at this competition. And then we will be taking a few home and bringing the other nine down.
I'm glad you said it's in Werribee, right? I'd hate to see if it was in like Western Australia or something like that. You know, that's a big convoy going across country. Tell us a little bit about Senen and sort of how the relationship with Senen comes about and what is it about Senen that then brings this journey towards Paris?
Yeah. So Senen and I have been working as a partnership for about 2 years now. He came into our barn, the Sable Farm, just before I turned 18 and we started competing as soon as I turned 18, as you have to be 18 plus to compete a stallion. And we've built an amazing partnership ever since. Every single comp, we're getting better and better. I'm so thankful for the opportunity. He's an incredible horse. He's got a lot of suspense. He carries himself and he's definitely got a wow factor about him. Everybody likes to stop and watch him. I'm very lucky. He's got beautiful straight changes and he's got great training. So for me to take over the ride, we say it takes about 18 months, maybe 2 years, which I'm coming up on now, to really get the feel for a horse at that sort of level. Because every aid is so different that different trainers train. So to understand exactly where he was trained and then transfer him a little bit to how I like them to go. And so it's been an incredible journey and he's going amazing. And guns firing for our next competition. We compete in the World Cup in about a week and a half at Werribee Park.
Wow, there you go. Why do you have to be 18 until you can ride a stallion?
The stallions are a little bit more tricky at times. In different disciplines, it's younger. It used to be 16 with an exemption, I'm pretty sure. But then the age got changed to 18. So anyone over 18 can compete a stallion. I think then they have more horse sense and that they can make sure that they're safe at all times as well as the competitors around you. Because it's not only yourself you have to worry about. Same as driving a car. You've always got to be watching who's around you and what everybody else is doing to stay safe. So I'm very lucky that, yes, he is a stallion, so they can be a little bit difficult at times. But he's really, really good. So we've worked really hard. Once I'm on him, he's perfect. So... yeah, so in the Arabian stuff, it's 16 plus. I think the jumping might be 12 plus maybe. Don't quote me on that one, but with exemptions. So, yeah.
In terms of outside of the obvious of training and everything that you're arranging in the lead up to a competition, how else can you bond with Senen? Do you just kind of just take for a casual ride? Let's go have a picnic, come down to the water. Like, I mean, a horse is a horse, right? It's, as we've discussed, right? They've got personality, they've got feelings. So I can't imagine that it's all a case of work, work, work. Let's have some fun with Senen.
Yeah. So spending time with your horse is very big to build a partnership with them. So whether that's giving your horse a bath or grooming them, feeding them carrots, giving them their breakfast and dinner, and being the person that does lots with them to ensure you keep a really special bond with them. not always doing the hard work on them of big rides and hard training sessions, making sure you take your horse out for trail rides and picnics, like you said, taking them for a walk and letting them eat some grass and keeping everything a little bit more hands-on.
Listen to some music. Does Senan enjoy some music?
Senan might not, but I do.
Right.
I have music playing all the time. So
what's your go-to music? What's your music that you're getting into?
Absolutely everything. So we've grown up with a lot of country music. So country music is always a big thing that gets played here. Pop music, really older style, like 90s music and a little bit older sometimes. We have a little bit of everything. So everyone in the barn has their own preferences, but I really like riding with music. It keeps me in a really good headspace and keeps everything quite calm. And I find the horses actually really like having it on, something different.
Because is there music? Are you playing music during competition? Like in the Olympics, is it like a gymnastics where you choose a song to do a routine to?
Yeah, so not in our Grand Prix or the Grand Prix special. Sometimes I'll have music on in the background or play it so that the audience gets a little bit more thrill of the music changing and stuff like that. But for our freestyle, we get to pick our own music and we get it made. There's lots of people that make incredible freestyle music. I currently use Sand Dancer Freestyle. She helps make all of ours. So we video our tests and she makes music to specific timings of how I've done everything. There's transition music and it's really, really cool. It's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes.
So it's not just like you're picking a Lee Kernaghan track or something like that. It's actually specifically tailor-made to your routine.
Yep. Yeah, right. Definitely is.
Okay. And just on sort of when you say get sent in, like obviously in the training, as you're saying, you're talking to him, you're doing all that sort of stuff. Is it a case with him and other horses that some will react differently if all of a sudden you're in front of a big crowd, you know? So like obviously the Olympic Games, you're going to be in a pretty darn nifty environment there in Paris, which we'll talk about. But like, is it a case of all of a sudden, shit, this horse is going to have stage fright? And how do you curtail that in the lead up to an event like that?
Yeah, so that's definitely something that you always have to be mindful of. I'm very fortunate with Senan that, you know, if we do make Paris, which we're pushing for, he loves an environment. He actually gets way better when there's lots of people around and big noise. He turns on a show. He likes to be in the spotlight, so he's super with it. But other horses coming through the levels, and that's something that you take your time with of taking them out to the smaller competitions until they get comfortable and then building your way up to bigger competitions with more atmosphere.
Just get some massive speakers with like the MCG crowds or just take them along to a footy game or something like that, going like, Senan, exactly. Get out there. You know, you're full forward today, 100,000 people playing along there. I mean, with Paris, so I believe you have reached the qualification criteria, but you're not there yet. Is that correct? Explain to me what is stopping you from being on that plane to Paris right now.
Yeah. So basically, first of all, it's yourself and the horse. We're both athletes. So it's making sure that we both stay maintained the whole way through our campaign and making sure we're both healthy and in top condition at all times. Senna and I are very fortunate to have already met the qualification criteria of this year was set to be 69 or above or approaching. And showing improvement. We've got scores 70 plus and 71 plus in the Grand Prix, and we also have special and freestyle scores. So we're very, very lucky to have already met the qualification criteria. The next step is to head to Europe, which we plan to do in the start of April, to compete in Nations Cups and continue our campaign and training. So everybody, we have an amazing team of Australians trying for Paris this year, which is incredible. There's many, many riders that have great combinations and that are trying really hard to get there. So fingers crossed, Senna and I make the team, but there's an incredible group of Australians trying. So all we can do is continue to be the best we can be and improve every single competition.
What do you do for your training? So obviously outside of jumping on Senna and doing all the routines and everything along those lines, is there specific gym work that you're having to do? Is there a lot of mental preparedness you've got to do with some of the stuff you do? I mean, take us through sort of a just routine for yourself outside of being with Senan.
So making sure you're eating healthy at all times and making sure you have a really good diet as you compete and train, because we do use a lot of muscles, and making sure that we're working hard at all times. You know, we get tired, we sweat, you know, it's a lot of blood, sweat and tears that go into the horses. So making sure we have a really good diet. I actually ride quite a few horses every day, so all of my muscles get quite a big workout, as well as then the general maintenance and the feeding and the cleaning boxes of always picking stuff up. So my muscles get a very good workout every single day. But definitely there's people that do Pilates. I did Pilates for a while, and I think that definitely improved my core. I wasn't riding as many at that time. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of outside time as I coach as well as ride the horses and work in the barns and prep horses for competition. But Pilates, gym work, ensuring you're eating really well, mental side of it. I'm very fortunate that I have an amazing team around me from Sable Farm. Sam and Brett, the owners of the horses, are always amazing. Coaches such as Mary Hannah, who's been to six Olympics, has had lots of chats with me about, you know, the games and what to prepare for. And one of the biggest things that she told me, and this probably would have been well over a year ago, was don't worry about it. Don't stress. You're going to ride 100 more center lines in your lifetime. You get in that arena and you nail it. And that's something that's always stuck with me. And then my family here that have been incredible, supporting me every step of the way. The amazing team we have at Future Farms, of all the girls that work tirelessly to make sure all the horses are looking amazing and working alongside us. And then the coach that I'm basing with in Europe, Annemiek van Koort at Crom Stables, is contacting me before and after every competition. So I'm very, very fortunate.
A two-part question with Mary. I mean, I believe she's also trying to qualify herself, right? So, I mean, is it kind of a case that your coach is kind of like a rival in the fact that you're fighting for a position for Paris? Is that how that works?
So, for me, there's no rivalry in good competition. So, Mary and I had an amazing comp.
That's a great answer, Stray. I'm sorry to interrupt, but straight away, that is such a perfect level. I love that, Jess. Keep going. Sorry. So good.
We had a great competition at Willinga Park, and I was very fortunate to have won all three tests. And there's no competition there. Mary was up there hugging me and telling me what an amazing job I'd done, and her younger horse that's coming to the level. I was talking to her about how amazing he is in the Grand Prix, and so there's never any competition there. It's always pushing each other to be the best that we can be.
Such a great answer. Seriously, that's one of the best answers we've ever had in the show. But the other part of that, though, like, and you touched on it there, obviously. I mean, she's been to six Olympics. You get to Paris, all, you know, boxes are ticked. Like, just to have that level where she can explain to you, because this is the thing with an Olympics, it's such a different environment to what, no doubt, you've used to any international event you've competed in. I mean, to have her to lean on, no matter, I mean, she will be there, let's be honest, let's stay positive on this show, but in terms of just what that will help you to kind of deal with everything that's going to come with going to an Olympic Games.
Definitely, definitely. And we're very lucky that EA has been amazing, as well as Mary, that ensuring we're really prepared as we continue our campaigns of all these top riders as we're coming through, ensuring we know the ins and outs of what Paris will be and starting to get all the information collated, and then Mary telling me about her experiences. I think I'm really, really prepared and really looking forward to what could happen, and hopefully I make this team, and I'm really excited to see what this year holds.
As we've just touched on, you've basically got one foot on the plane, but what would it mean to you, Jess, to make that Olympic team in Paris?
It would mean everything. We've worked tirelessly for not just this year leading into it and last year, for years and years to prepare for this sort of moment of pushing for this Olympics. And I'm very, very fortunate that I have the horse underneath me, that Senna, that's incredible and would be amazing there under the spotlight and in that sort of atmosphere. And it would mean everything that we've trained so hard to push at this level. And I think myself and Senna are doing a really, really good job, and we're improving every competition. And to be able to represent my country, I was fortunate enough last year to do it in the young rider section, and I've done it before in the UAE. But to be able to represent at the Olympics would be a whole other ball game.
Which all the things that come with it, right? We've already touched on that dressage is a French word. The equestrian was first at the Olympics in Paris in 1900, and this would be at the Palace of Versailles. I mean, let's be honest. You talk about iconic arenas for Olympic sport. I don't think this can be top. Sure, you're having beach volleyball under the Eiffel Tower, but that's all, like, let's put some sand under there, whatever. Like, this is where horses should be competing at the Palace of Versailles. I mean, that just adds, you're not making your debut at some backwards Olympics, Jess. This is Paris, for goodness sakes.
It would be incredible. And all of the photos we've seen of the arenas getting set up and the grounds is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And I think it makes everybody push for it even more, because it's just an amazing place. And we'd all love to be there.
Did I read somewhere that the amount of seating they're going to be adding is going to be like something ridiculous, like 60, 80,000 or something like, which I mean, like that's, again, MCG levels of stands. Like, I mean, I don't know if Equestrian has ever competed in front of that many people before.
The tickets are actually already sold out.
Wow. Of course they are.
They sold out, and it was everybody who was on the first list, basically. Yeah. The only people that were able to get tickets. So it's incredible the support that the equestrian gets.
Because, I mean, the French love it, right? The French are absolutely equestrian mad. Which, and one thing that I didn't realise in the lead up into this interview, Jess, is that, I mean, Australia, great success in equestrian at the Olympics, but we've actually never medaled in dressage. This is something that I was completely unfamiliar with. I found out that our best ever finish was ninth in Sydney by Christy Oatley, got ninth back in Sydney at a home Olympics. A good place to do it. But, I mean, why haven't we medaled in dressage? This has got to be fixed, right?
That's the plan. So I think Equestrian Australia has been super supportive of trying to get us into Nations Cups and lots of other big competitions, because here in Australia we have some amazing CDIs and amazing groups that run these competitions, but we don't get the experience a lot of the European riders get with these massive competitions and the big atmospheres. So Equestrian Australia is pushing really hard to ensure that we get the best opportunities to keep improving and doing the best that we can do. So I think in the coming years, you could be seeing Dressage Australia placing on the podium.
Well, I'm saying we will. And, I mean, we've also got a good, 8 years till a home Olympics. So, I mean, I don't think you were born for Sydney. I think this is just aging me. But, I mean, I remember the medals we were winning in Sydney and the equestrian and everything on those lines. So we've got perfect time in Brisbane. I'm looking here, though. So the medal tally for the Olympics for Dressage, Germany, dominant when it comes to dressage. Sweden, pretty good in dressage. Didn't realize that. France, even America. I didn't realize. No disrespect to our Americans listening, but I didn't realize that Americans were on board with the dressage. So I'm just trying to work out our rivalries going into Paris here, Jess, who we've got to kind of really keep an eye on when it comes to the dressage arm. Any other countries I'm missing out there that we really need to keep an eye on who's really good at dressage?
I think a lot of the Netherlands is another one that's amazing, and obviously Germany and a lot of those European countries that you've talked about. But I think everybody going into this Olympics, I think the dressage world has stepped up, and I think that we're all pushing to be the best we can be in every country.
One thing that is good, not only have we not won a medal in dressage, neither have New Zealand. So that's at least one positive that we can say that we will keep going through that there as well. Hello to all our Kiwis listening. We're going to get to some fun wrap-up questions in just a moment, Jess, but just a couple of things that I do like to sort of close on before we move on to that. So obviously you said you're touching on sort of going over to Europe and kind of that. So basically we're recording this in March. By the time people are hearing this, you're going to be in Europe at the time of listening to this. But, I mean, are you basically then in Europe that whole time until Paris? Do you get to come home again before you go to Paris, or this is it? Like I'm Europe, summer European vacation with the Olympics at the end.
This is it. So we planned ahead basically the first week of April. We haven't got a specific date yet for the horse to fly, but Senna and I then head over. We're basing in the Netherlands at Crom Stables with Annemiek van Koort, and then competing in a couple of competitions and hopefully being Nations Cups for a couple of them before Paris Olympics. And that will continue our campaign and let the selectors see what we're like in a major competition environment, including the Nations Cup, how we get along with the other Australian riders and ensuring that we're pushing as hard as we can. They can see that before Paris.
I mean, as I keep saying in this show to our guests who are, you know, going to be away from home for a long time, it's a perfect time to come back to Australia with a gold medal around your neck at the Welcome Home Parade, right? Like that's what you want to do. Get off the, you know, first class Qantas landing in Sydney, gold medal, you know, inside, that gets a bit of inspiration out there for you, Jess, surely.
Definitely. That would be absolutely dreams come true.
Exactly.
That's,
there you go.
That's always the goal.
take that, put, you know, envision the podium there. Obviously, again, at the time of recording this, by the time this is released, probably it will be over, but talk to me a little bit about the auction that you've got going on, sort of fundraising elements that come with that. How can sort of people help you out with that along the way?
Yep. So we've just launched the online auction this morning. Actually, it just went live. We've been very, very fortunate that there's so many people, not even just in the equestrian industry, but also luxury leather goods and hairdressing and lots of different stuff that's come through for this auction. And We're very grateful for all the people that have supported us. There's also on this auction site a link for donating funds as well, as dreams don't come without a cost. So we are pushing everything we can to make sure that we have a great journey over there and are able to get over there. So we're trying to raise about $120,000. So
just a
little
bit.
Lot of money. So we're very, very grateful for all the people that have donated, and we're hoping people get on and bid and help support a young Australian rider to head over to try and get to the games.
Now, let's be honest. Like, is that majority for Senan? Is Senan a bit of a diva? Does he need, like, sort of a certain few things to kind of, you know, pamper? Like, he wants the five-star Dutch hotels and the stables. Like, that's all for him, right?
Lots of that is for him, and I'm having to leave my full-time job here as 19 years old to head over to chase this journey with him. So there's obviously accommodation and stuff like that for me in an apartment while I'm there. But majority is Senan, because there's obviously always lots of costs involved with horses. And yeah.
How is that for like a horse traveling to the other side of the world? Because I mean, that is a big journey for a human being, let alone a horse. Like, I mean, how do you transport a horse from Australia to Paris?
I was lucky enough to actually get to fly with Gladstone MH to compete in a Nations Cup last year in Germany for the young riders. And there's lots of preparation. The vets come out and they have to have had months leading into of getting injections and making sure they're vaccinated and ready to go. Then we load the horses into the plane. They go in like a big box, basically like a portable stable for them. And they get put in a bay, a transport bay, and we get loaded into the planes. And I traveled with the horse, which was awesome. So we got to sit at the front of the plane. There was about four seats that fully reclined, which was amazing.
Nice.
And every hour and a half or 2 hours, we were in the back in the cargo plane, because they fly on cargo planes,
right?
With the horses, and making sure they were eating and they were drinking and taking care of them in the basically stable box that the Gladstone was in, Glow was in. There was also two thoroughbreds, so I was helping look after those two thoroughbreds as well. And so it took about 40 hours from the time that we left here, and then we went from Melbourne to Bangkok, Bangkok to Doha, and Doha to Amsterdam.
Wow.
It took about 40 hours by the time we actually got the horses off and to leave the airports. So it took a long time, but it was a great way of travel, because I got to know everything that was happening with the horse at all times. And we flew with IRT, and the groom that they had on, the head groom for IRT on the plane, was incredible, and made sure that we knew exactly what we were doing on flight, because obviously I'd never flown with a horse before, and to make sure that they're drinking enough and eating enough. And he was super. So it's an incredible journey. So I look forward to seeing Senan go as well.
Even more so then for that gold medal coming back with a first class with Qantas, because going in the back there. Two things before I get to the questions. First one, I put this to Andrew when we had Andrew Hoy on a couple of years back, and it's a question that I think we need to get to the bottom of, and we need to contact the IOC. Why do the horses not get a medal at the Olympics? I think this is a travesty. Like, I mean, when you win gold, you will get a shiny, beautiful gold medal, piece of the Eiffel Tower, everything around your neck. Senan, what does Senan get? Like, where's the gold medal for the horses?
Senan will get unlimited treats if we win a medal. But I think the same thing as we're a partnership. So whatever I receive is what he receives. So on a good day, we both are in a super mood. On a bad day, we get to the end and we go, oh, well, we can do better next time. So I think it would be incredible to get a medal one day, and it would be amazing, and that would be a journey between myself and the combination I'm on.
Great answer again, but I'm saying this now, though. If you win it, you obviously get a gold medal. You go on a stamp, right? That's a great honour as an Australian Olympic gold medalist. You get a stamp, Australia Post. If you do win that gold, when you win that gold, if they cut off Senan from that stamp, riots in the street. Come on. He should be on a stamp as well, right?
Definitely.
Like, I can't remember the stamps from Sydney with the gold with the eventing team. I don't know if they cut the horses off or we just had them waving, but I'm just saying right now, there needs to be a Senan stamp.
He deserves the whole stamp to himself.
He does. Like, I want to get my mail with a Senan stamp. I'm like, oh, there's Jess. Who cares? Where's Senan? Like, that's what I want, right? Like that's,
yeah, exactly.
No disrespect, Jess. You're a great athlete, but I'm all for Sennin. All right. Like I want to see Sennin on a stamp. The other one I've got to ask now, we get inspirational on this show, Jess. We've got a mascot on this show. All right. I'd like you to meet Cherry. This is Cherry. He's a chair. If you can't tell, he's got a gold medal. He hasn't been on a stamp yet though. How inspirational would Cherry be for your journey to Paris? If we were to get you a Cherry, do you think that Cherry could help you on your journey towards not only making the Olympics, but getting on that stamp and getting a gold medal?
Oh, definitely. He could sit on the tack box and be there every step of the way.
Exactly. How would he be at dressage? Like with a couple of these like movements, right? Like if you were to sit on Cherry, do you think you could train Cherry to be a dressage chair?
We could always try.
Why not? It's got the socks on. It's a bandage, but they wear socks, right? Like, you know, come on. There you go. We'll find a way to get you one, and then that way we can work it out. All right, Jess, we wrap up every interview with a set of get to know your sock questions. As always, these are based off a set of get to know your questions that they gave the Canadian Olympic team ahead of Rio and Pyeongchang. There is a drawing element. It's completely optional. We always put this to our guests. First of all, how are your drawing skills? Have you got any drawing skills that you like to sort of, you know, keep hidden or out there at all?
They're definitely not very good.
All right. Well, if you want to, you can. You can draw a picture of yourself. You can draw a picture of a Canadian animal. I'm going to say draw a picture of Sennin because that's what we really want to see. And the coolest Olympic medal. So, again, optional if you want to. We'll put it out there. But I'll start off with the first question, with this being your favorite Olympic moment is?
Probably watching all the Australians compete last year because I was pushing really hard to go, look, next Olympics is what I really want to push for. So sitting by that TV and supporting all my fellow Australians and cheering them on is definitely a highlight for me of going, I really want to do this.
And Andrew's just, I always use him as the bar, right? Because, like, I mean, it doesn't matter what age, how many medals. I mean, he's still pushing for Paris. I mean, when we had him on the show, he said, Brisbane, why not? Like, I mean, just what is it like to have someone like Andrew frickin' Hoy, who is just winning medals into his 60s as you're tuning in to watch it?
It's amazing. It's inspirational. It's amazing. And he's such a lovely person. I had a lot of conversations with him at Aachen last year now, and he's so humble for what he's done, and it's incredible. It's very, very inspirational.
How would he go in dressage, do you think? Too late for him to switch, or?
He could definitely come to dressage.
There you go. Just add a bit of a challenge to it. I'd watch it. If you could choose any Olympic host city, where would it be?
Ooh.
Say Belinda. Do you think Belinda could handle the Olympics? Or?
No. I think Paris is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. And obviously we can't wait for it to be in Brisbane and in Australia, but I think Paris is going to be incredible.
I agree. And I mean, the beauty too, though, as I'll say about as an equestrian athlete, right? I mean, you're what, 19, I believe. So, you know, it's still very young. And then even Brisbane coming around, you're not even going to be 30 yet. As I said, Andrew's in his 60s. So, I mean, you're going to be competing until like the 2080 Olympics, when it's probably going to be in Sydney again or Melbourne again or something like that. So I reckon, you know, we're 34 years, 32 years between Sydney and Brisbane, there's another home Olympics in it. You're going to have a couple by the time you retire, Jess.
That would be pretty amazing.
Long career as equestrian athletes, right? In your spare time, what do you most like to do?
I do a lot of coaching in my spare time. I really enjoy giving back the information that I've learned and all of the different tips and tricks that I've learned over the years of training and learning from many coaches such as Annemiek Vincourt, Mary Hannah, and my mum, Kate Dertel. So giving that back to people of all levels is something that I really, really enjoy doing.
Is equestrian a sport where you poach people from other sports? Like, are you at some certain, like, are you at cycling? Like, you can ride a bike good, you'd ride a horse better. Like, I mean, we like to hear from a lot of athletes on this show who get poached from other sports. As a coach, are you keeping an eye out for other athletes going, come to equestrian, it's more fun?
It's not exactly something that you poach for the fact that they have to love the animal that they're working with, and they have to have a bond, and it's not easy. It takes years and years to even get the basics of a walk, trot, canter, and then even more to start to learn the movements and the natural ability. Yes, you may move through faster, but if you don't love what you're doing and love the horse that you're riding, then it doesn't work.
Does that make it then that there's a rivalry between like equestrian and say like horse riders, like jockeys? Like are you going to like jockeys? Like, no, don't ride the Melbourne Cup. Go to the Olympics instead. It's better.
No, I think we all have utmost respect for every single equestrian industry, because at the top level, you know how hard it is for every single rider and athlete and horse to compete. Not only that, the team behind you of the grooms and the trainers and coaches and supporters, that it's a very, very hard sport. So I think anything in the equestrian industry that at top level, everybody's really supportive.
That's what we like to hear. That's a good way of answering that one. What is the weirdest instruction a coach ever gave you?
I'm not sure. That's a funny one. I have to get back to you on that one.
Please do. We'd like to learn that one. We always get some very inspirational lines in that question. Your favorite sandwich is?
Oh, chicken, avocado, and mayo.
Nice. Are you like sourdough, white bread, rye? Like, what's the go-to bread?
Anything with carbs, yum. Oh.
So this is where I'm going back to my love of Senen, because I'm keto, so I can't have carbs. So now it's just making me sad that I asked that question and you answered it that way. So I feel like I need to make you draw now just as punishment. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
To see the future.
We've never had that one before. I like this. So you want to visualize and literally visualize the gold medal around the neck.
Well, that would be pretty cool.
Hey.
But see the future, there's lots of things that, you know, you can prepare for and do then.
How far are we going though? Like, are you going to be wanting to see like, you know, retired Jess with the gold medals around the neck, like, you know, with the family and all that sort of stuff? Or are we just wanting to see like 6 months of you walking out into the opening ceremony, waving it at the family?
Either. Both. Okay. Why not?
Why not? Yeah. Okay. I like that. The best candy in the world is...
Oh, the Hershey's cookies and cream chocolate.
Oh, yes.
Or the Lifesavers bananas are so good.
Oh, yes. Lifesavers, like that never gets answered, but that's a great answer. Oh, God. Really need to stop asking these questions around lunchtime as well. As a kid, your favorite sports team was?
Favorite sports team? Probably the Blue Jays, because we watched a lot of baseball with Dad growing up.
Have you been to a Blue Jays game over in Canada at all?
Not a Blue Jays game, but lots of little games when we were in America, but not big league.
It's an experience. It really is. They definitely know how to put it on over there. Your favorite sports movie is?
Moneyball.
Oh, good answer. Yes. I was thinking about that actually the other day. I was like, oh, what's that movie? And I remember it clicked. So good answer. Are there equestrian movies or like documentaries or like Netflix shows or anything like that people can check out?
Yeah, but they're mostly based around maybe the racing industry.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot on dressage or jumping and stuff like that, but there's lots of little TV shows and lots of racing sort of movies.
Until you dominate the sport and then make the Jess Dirtell story, right? Like, you know, just Australia's first ever dressage gold medalist. It screams movie being made out of it. Okay.
One can hope.
Exactly. And Senen should get a movie too, right? Like, it's not just about
exactly.
you. But I always relate it to, has James Bond done it? Now, James Bond's ridden horses, but I don't think James Bond has done dressage yet. Okay. So just yet being the word.
If you could leave, he's going to see the podcast and now we will.
Big listener to the podcast, James Bond. Just Daniel Craig, Pierce Brosnan, they're watching it all the time. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
I think I'm pretty fortunate where we live here. We have an amazing property that's very, very functional for what we do. We're close to the city. We have some beautiful small towns around us, close to competitions. I like the weather because I don't like it being really hot. So I think we're in a very, very good spot.
I'm from Tasmania, Jess, and I live in Sydney. So trust me, I'm with you. I like seasonal weather where it can get cold and miserable and not just humid and hot half the time. So I'm with you with the weather. I'm glad there are smart people like us out there. I love this question because it is so open-ended. You can interpret this however you want. When you were little, what was one thing you always thought?
I always thought I was going to open a cafe. I have no clue why, but I've always loved baking. So I used to do a lot of baking when I had more time, but I always thought I'd open some sort of cafe, and always obviously with the horses and dreaming to do lots of stuff with that, but that's something non-horsey for you.
Well, hang on. You could have, like, you know how you've got like dog cafes and cat cafes? Why couldn't you have a horse cafe?
I think a lot of people would get very scared if there was horses walking down the street and going into a cafe.
Maybe, but I'm sure there are parts of Australia where that would work. Like you said you're in horse mecca, right? So like, I mean, you know, that would just be standard, okay? Bring back the old days where like, get rid of the cars and horses, you know? Come
Why
on.
Not?
That would be doable. Again, you're still very young. So like, I mean, you know, there's plenty of time to open a cafe. I like going to France, cafe capital of the world. You're going to like see all the culture, bring a bit of Paris back to Victoria. You know, there you go. You might not have an answer for this, but if you do, great. If not, we can move on. What is your favorite joke to tell?
Oh, God, I don't have a lot of jokes. I'm just very sarcastic.
Right,
so
fine.
My jokes are to do some sarcasm back at people sometimes.
Is there like a horse humor, dressage humor that you have? Like, is there a dressage joke that people in dressage would get or?
I don't think so.
No? All right. We'd like...
Pretty boring.
We'd like some jokes on this show every now and then. We try and be funny. Your favourite workout is?
Favourite workout? I don't know what to tell you. I work out every day riding these horses and doing all the chores around them. So horse riding.
You get to ride. I mean, that's a perfect answer. Riding horse. I like it. Last question for you, Jess. If you could have lunch with any one person, who would it be?
Only one person.
Yeah, let's one. Let's keep it strict. One person. That's it.
I think I would like to have lunch with Isabel Wirth.
Okay.
I think she's an inspiration in the equestrian industry with the horses and the dressage, and you know, talk to her about the Olympics she's also been to, and talk to her about her different training methods and stuff like that. Because I'm very lucky that the support crew I have around me, I've learnt lots and lots, and I can have lunch with them any day. So it's somebody that's a bit different.
You've just got Andrew on speed dial. Like, g'day, Andrew. You want to go get a chicken avocado and mayo sandwich? I'm hungry. I'll come to my cafe, right?
Exactly. Horse cafe. Bring the horse.
Exactly. Just before we let you go, if people want to follow your journey between now and Paris, social media, Instagram, I was going to call it Twitter. It's X now, isn't it? TikTok. Are you on TikTok? Like, where can people follow you?
So we have a Facebook page where we do a lot of posting on, which is Future Farms Arabians. And then I have my Instagram page, which is jessica_dertel.
There you go. I like it. Easy. Jess, it's been an absolute pleasure. Seriously, I could speak to you to another 5 hours about the intricacies and everything around dressage and everything along those lines, but it's been so great to learn about you, the sport, everything else in between, and of course, most importantly, Senan. Put Senan on a stamp. That's all I'm saying.
Definitely. I think he should be.
And a massive, massive thanks to Jess for her time, as well as to the great folks at Equestrian Australia, particularly to Joe for helping arrange that interview for us today. So fascinating to learn all about the intricacies and everything there with Jess about dressage. Now, I still don't know if I fully understand it, but that's fine because I got it explained to me to a point where I can watch and I can maybe take a little bit more in Paris, particularly at the Palace of Versailles. I mean, absolutely incredible where that is going to be there as well. And the fact that, too, that if we can't get Senan a medal, that Senan can be on a stamp. That's what we want, right? So there you go. I also want to apologize formally to Cherry because during that interview, if you're listening to this and you've seen the video version of it, I put Cherry down and Cherry fell on the floor. So... I don't need to really fully go into that every time in an interview, but I just feel bad that Cherry's currently laying on the floor while I record this closing part. But anyway, Jess, best of luck to everything that is coming her way ahead of the Olympics later this year. And when I say later this year, let's be honest, 2 months away. We're basically 2 months away from the Olympics. So it's not even later this year anymore. It's only literally a couple of months away. So obviously we're ramping up our coverage in the lead up to those Olympics, some more great guests coming your way. But next week, so excited, we're doing something brand new here on Off the Podium. Our first ever news episode, we are calling it our Off the Podium newscast. where each week between now and the Olympics, we will be bringing you a weekly news episode to update you on all things happening with the Olympics, and not just for Australia, but Canada and even America as well. We will be joined by a very special new co-host on the show who we're very, very excited to be joining us. So stay tuned for that one, and that will be dropping every single week. So that will be our next episode. And also next week, of course, we're going to be now having three episodes a week coming down your speakers between now and Paris. We're going back to the great sport of cycling. We're speaking to Aussie Olympian Grace Brown, narrowly missed out on a medal at the Tokyo Olympics. She finished fourth in the time trial. So very close to a medal. And going into Paris, she's a real prospect of going better, getting a medal, getting on that podium for Australia, and a real prospect of gold. So that is a great chat coming your way next week, as well as returning to the sport of artistic swimming. We've got so many great episodes next week, so be sure to tune in to those next week. And remember, that news episode is dropping in only a few more days' time. Other great episodes coming your way as well. So stay tuned for everything off the podium. Search us on social media if you don't already. And of course, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get good podcasts from. Big thanks again to Jess for her time. As always, remember to take a step to Jason Momoa. That's not what I usually say, but for some reason that sounded interesting. As always, shout out to Jason Momoa. Put a sock in it, Mountain. Took the words right out of my mouth. Birmingham Bull. And what I was meant to say is, remember, as always, to go left. Yeah.